We're about to talk to Agapi Stassinopoulos, who's just written Conversations with the Goddesses, Revealing the Divine Power Within You. Welcome to Book Chat.
Thank you, Mark. It's great to be here.
This book is the story of seven women who, if I've got them correctly, are Aphrodite, Artemis, Athena, Persephone, Demeter, Hera, and Hestia. Is that about right?
And did we say Demeter?
Demeter, yes, we did. And Demeter, right. Each of these goddesses represents a particular aspect of the feminine psyche.
That's right.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about how that works?
I like to look at it like a diamond with seven aspects. And if we describe that we are the diamond, the seven aspects of our psyche would be Aphrodite, representing the ultimate femininity, sensuality, beauty, passion, the eros of our lives. Demeter, which would be the nurturing, the mothering, the part of ourselves that loves to mother and nurture, that is abundant. Persephone, who would be her daughter, who is the goddess of the underworld, representing the part of ourselves that is transformative, that goes into the depths of darkness and emerges back into the light. Hera, which is the goddess of marriage, the matrimony, the aspect of ourselves that wants to be in partnership with another. Hestia, which is the goddess of the hearth, which is the aspect of ourselves that is the homemaker, the one that wants to make the homes beautiful and comfortable and warm. She brings warmth and illuminates our lives. Athena, which is the aspect that is wise and discerning, and it's very important part of our psyche because it's the male aspect within our femininity that ushers us into the world to be successful and to also become as competent as men, the one that gives us permission to say, go be out in the world and be as successful as men without competition. And Artemis, which is the independent part of ourselves, the freedom, the spirit that thrives. And it thrives in nature and is complete within herself. So there they are, the seven aspects.
Now, the idea isn't that any particular woman embodies all of and only one of the goddesses, but rather is a blend with different proportions of the goddess. Is that right?
That's exactly right, Mark, that each one of us has predominant qualities. Some women from a young age, they want to be career women. Some women always seem to want to fall in love, and that is the predominant characteristic. Some women want to be wives. Other women want to be adventurous and attempt things that they've never attempted before. So women embody different aspects, but what I'm saying in this book is that we all have access to all of them if we so want it. So it gives us a certain permission and freedom to not be stuck in one quality.
Now, beyond just saying that people, that women have permission to access these aspects of themselves, the book includes in each chapter about each goddess exercises that can be used to actually do that accessing, right?
Right, exactly. So, for example, you know, a woman says, well, I want to be more like Aphrodite. I want to be more sensual. I want to have more femininity in my life. I want to have that aspect that is beautiful. So, first of all, I would say, you know, how to get in touch with Aphrodite. And I would go into, and I would say, revealing your inner, and I have a whole meditation that says, reveal your inner and outer beauty. And about going into a healing meditation to find the part that is beautiful. I would go into an aspect that says, after you have healed yourself in the judgments that we might hold against ourselves, that we are not beautiful, make your environment beautiful, make yourself beautiful, but from inside out, so that the inside radiates out the femininity and the sensuality.
It's fairly long here, and people, of course, will have to buy the book to get the whole story, but maybe you could briefly synopsize the meditation that you've got here for getting in touch with your inner Aphrodite.
Well, I ask people to go into a little scuba diving journey and to go under the water and find a treasure. And in that treasure is their inner beauty is hidden. And they immerse it up into the water. They bring it up. And as you bring it up, you get in touch again with that part of yourself. And then you anchor it in yourself. You kind of breathe it in. And in breathing it in, you infuse yourself with that beauty that people have actually put in the closet, or they have suppressed it. So we are awakening that part again.
So through the method of visualization is how you do that.
Exactly right. That's exactly right. Visualization.
There are two, I guess you could call them experts on myth, who figure fairly frequently in the book here, Carl Jung and Joseph Campbell. Yes. Could you say something about their contribution to your thinking and to the ideas in the book?
Yes. Well, they're both my heroes. Carl Jung, obviously, is a psychologist. Gave names to these archetypes and talked about it in all his books, the different archetypes and how they're represented in us. And Joseph Campbell made us realize that mythology is as alive today as any time, and that in the myths we discover aspects of ourselves, we discover our storytelling, we enliven the human nature. So I use them quite a lot.
I'd like to sort of take us back, sort of beyond, previous to what happens in your book, and then beyond it, to sort of discuss a single subject. We're in a highly technological age here, at least around here, and it shows every sign of becoming even more technological. Can you say something about the relationship of the permanence of these archetypes in terms of what happens? Do they disappear? Do they stay the same? Do they mutate as the society gets further and further from the agrarian roots that were the basis of the stories in the first place?
Is your question about how it ties into the past? Is that what you're asking me?
Well, no, that's my next question. My question is now, how does it tie into the future? Will these archetypes continue to exist even if we're on Mars, if everything is done by computers, if there's bioengineering? What happens to the archetypes? Are they eternal?
They definitely are. They are, because these are truths, you know, that no matter what happens to technology, no matter if we, you know, inhabit Mars or we find other, life in other planets, it doesn't matter. Human nature is human nature. Human nature has always been human nature and will always be human nature. You know, no matter what we do, men will always fall in love. Mankind will always fall in love, will always procreate, will always want to have relationships. We would always want to merge into our adventures, and so these are just primordial energies and qualities that don't change.
Okay, well then that leads us backwards, maybe, to where these ideas and stories came from and how they relate to human nature. I have a theory.
Yes.
I'd like to hear your theory about essentially.
Sure.
Well, essentially that the gods were the early progenitors, in the same way that the Aboriginal people in Australia have the dream time, which was the time before they achieved their own current culture, that the Greeks, in the proto-Greek culture, there were great heroes and heroines who, as the very earliest humans in that area, had these typical adventures in bringing fire to themselves and in having the fights amongst the brothers and the parents, and were expressing in their struggles the qualities of human nature that were then refined and made literary in the stories that became the Greek myths. And therefore reflect those basic qualities of human nature, because they emerged out of a historical past that was a reflection of human nature.
That's very accurate. That's my theory too, that it emerged out of the human nature, and we created them out of ourselves so we can understand ourselves, and we made up the stories. They're made up from us. So you and I could be sitting there 3,000 years ago saying, there is a goddess called Aphrodite, and she is all about love making and eros. And if she throws her bows and arrows, you watch out, because you will fall in love and be completely transported. So, you know, that's the kind of thing.
So it's a way of so the people who created these stories used it as a means of explaining their experience and making it intelligible to themselves and controllable, I guess, then.
Yeah. That's right, exactly. And then once we understood them, we become much more, somehow we claim them for ourselves.
And in fact, then, when the Romans more or less bought out the Greek culture and assimilated it and transformed it and yeah. sort of made it a little simpler and more brutal, maybe, but and from there it spread into the rest of Europe. There's then the historical element that the stories migrated, but at the same time, the new peoples who were exposed to these stories, who had their own myths in many cases, also were able to assimilate these because human nature is human nature, whether it's ancient Britain or whether it's Greece or whether it's Rome.
Exactly, that's right. Yes, and they are eternal. It's exactly what you said. They are eternal.
You have a performance that you give called Conversations with the Goddesses, which is very closely related to this book. Tell us about that.
I do a one-woman show that is called Conversations with the Goddesses that is based, actually my book is based on my show. And what it is that I started doing that, Mark, and I had all these monologues from Bernard Shaw and Shakespeare. And I put them in my show. Like I have this monologue from Bernard Shaw's The Apple Cart, and she's the mistress to the king. And she says to him, give me a goddess's work to do and I will do it. I will even stoop to a queen's work if you share the throne with me. But do not pretend that people become great by doing great things. They do great things because they are great. And they are great just the same if they never did anything. It is what I am, not what I do, that you must worship in me. I am the real queen. I'm one of nature's queens, and they know it. And if you do not know it, you are not one of nature's kings. So that could very well be Aphrodite talking to anybody, because she's asserting herself, and she's full of herself.
So in fact, you found literary incarnations of the various goddesses and performed them, and include them in the book.
Yes, that's exactly what I did. I found these literary incarnations, and I made them the goddesses. It was a creative process for me, you know. And whenever I do my show, I always ask the audience to say, can you find any other ideas or characters that you think are like the goddesses?
Maybe we could focus in on two not that well-known goddesses, or actually three, and talk about them a little. I'd like to give, you seem to lament that Hestia doesn't get much attention these days.
Yes.
Maybe you could say a little bit about her and her Roman counterpart, Vesta.
Yes. Hestia is the goddess of the hearth, the centering. She's the one that has no temples or no statues built about her, because she is a very almost non-glamorous goddess. She's the goddess that is an essence, and she's full of service. I mean, when you see you will see her in the hearth. This fireplace, for example, we're sitting right here. If we had a fire, it would be the Hestia, because she illuminates, she warms us, but she brings a centering that is beyond materiality. And she's extraordinary.
I just wanted to give her a little of her due. Two goddesses who you treat as sort of one are Demeter and Persephone. Tell us their story and how heavily it seems that if you identify with anyone most here, it's Persephone.
Yes, I sure do, because I think Persephone goes through this heavy-duty loss of innocence and reality. And I think we all do in our lives. We kind of lose a certain aspect of ourselves that is idealistic to come back to reality. And Persephone, by being abducted by Hades and going into the underworld, discovers her darkness, embraces it, and then through divine intervention, she's up again to be with her mother. I think they both grieve, they both lose, and I think, Mark, all of us in our lives go through loss. I don't know a human being that hasn't lost something, you know, from the beginning when you lose your virginity, and then you lose your adolescence, and then you lose your youth, and then sometimes in life, you know, you lose loved ones, you lose jobs, but you're always growing into something else. So loss isn't bad, because loss means we are moving, we are transitioning. We are going into other levels of consciousness. So that's a very important part of the humanness. But we as human beings tend to want things to be the same, you know, to just have no change. Well, that isn't it. And Persephone and Demeter show us that there are cycles in life, that life is cyclical, it's not linear. And because it's cyclical, there are seasons, and things blossom, and things die, and things, you know, the trees, the leaves fall, they change color, just like human beings. So when we surrender to that myth, we become more full and more fulfilled.
One thing that isn't very prominent in this book is men.
Yes.
And so, and I have essentially two questions about that. One is, for the sensitive and understanding man, what can he learn from this book about women?
Well, first of all, he can learn about himself, because the goddesses are also part of the male psyche. Men fall in love, men want to succeed, men want to be partnered in the partner, men are nurturing, men are wise and discerning. So all these qualities that the goddesses have are also inherited in men. But I think they can look at women and identify, and as they are in relationships, they can say, this is the kind of woman I'm with or I want to be with, and find the attractive qualities that what attracts them in women by identifying the goddesses.
Presumably there could be a comparable book, Conversations with the Gods.
Yes.
But I'm not sure you're the one who's going to write it, are you?
Well, I've thought about it. Right now I'm so involved in this book and promoting this book, The Goddesses, and going. I want to do a documentary in Greece about the goddesses. I want to build my website, conversationsgoddesses.com, in a bigger way. So there's a lot more to do before I get on with the gods.
Okay. Say again something about the sort of complementary aspects of how a woman during the course of her life evolves from predominantly focusing on one goddess to another, and how at any particular time her psyche is a kind, of course, a goddess herself, or was she immortal? Okay.
Yes.
How to blend and balance the different goddess aspects within any particular woman?
I think the blend and balance is identifying the goddesses and then just saying, well, this is what I would like to be more of, and then going after that quality, really putting your right foot forward and accessing that quality and knowing that it's in you.
Should someone then imagine that they are predominantly of a certain goddess type, but that they have aspects of others?
I don't think it's so much imagining. I think it's recognizing. It's like I recognize that I have more of Persephone. I was, you know, and if people read the book and they are involved with the goddesses, they will say, oh, yes, that's who I am. They will identify themselves. And then, you know, you can say, but I want more of Athena. So when I wrote the book, for example, I had a lot of Athena acting out in me because I had to be very focused and strategic.
Okay, let's wrap up with this question. Let's assume that all the women in the world buy your book and do all the exercises and identify their primary goddess and manifest her all the time. What would that do to society?
I like this idea of every woman buying my book. I really like this idea of every woman having read this book. I think as women become more fulfilled and they're not lacking anything, but they feel fulfilled in themselves and they feel powerful, they're not victimized. You know, they're not feeling they have to blame men or society or somebody doing it to them or they can't get somewhere, but they are empowered. And if women are empowered, men are empowered, because then we will empower men ourselves. And we will walk around as empowered human beings, therefore there'll be a lot more freedom. That's what my book is about, freedom and empowerment.
Well, thank you for writing it. Thank you for talking to us. We're going to now use this very modern internet to try to send these ancient but still present ideas out to as many millions of people as we can, and see how close we can come to achieving the a future in which the past is recognized by everybody. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Marcos. A pleasure talking to you. Thank you.